This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
What up, it's Forza Philip on the track, yo. There's a new queen in this game. She go by the name.
Miracle trigger on the stack and casting it. Just like time St. Catherine's happening. 5-5 life link, think I'll flash it in. Trying for the truth, we both voracious. Oops, my B, I meant voracious. Honestly, my deck's predacious. My miracles are so salacious. Get your heart in public, ostentatious. 40K, that's Warhammer. In the church of force of fill, they clamor for his deck list. Cause they're so enamored. Cause it mashes like the Brits that's bangers. I correctly cast predictor plan to kind of balance all your tricks you jam. Determine this, your boy, your lands are stranded. I'll throw at your face and then I'll snap a candid. Presidium, protect team. That's St. Catherine's flavor feature. Shuffle sick cards right underneath her. She's Ethereum, I'm Tez the Seeker. I'm Botticelli, she's Primavera. I'm Monet, she's Farley Bajera. I'm Renoir, she's Grenoble. I'm Matisse, she's Bernal de Vivre. I'm Goya, she's Tormakia. I'm Van Gogh, she's Mona Lisa. I'm Rembrandt, she's the Thandabera. I'm Dubes on Twitch, she's the Pain Slayer. Warhammer, those were art bars. Like an artist, I draw cards. Illustrator, I'm illustrious. I'm a writer, here's a plot twist. Miracle St. Catherine, like a javelin to the abdomen. In the top sedan, she's a deadly sin. She'll string you out like a violin. She's sticky like a goblin. On the battlefield, she's residing in. No denying it or defying it. Time to resign the game and sign the slip. She'll beat you down with a cape and shield. She'll steal your life and then make you feel so sad and lonely and so defeated. You'll beg for mercy, wish you'd concede it, but you had your chance. That's in the past. This game was over when it came to pass. Your fate was sealed right from the start when I miracled this work of art. Miracle St. Catherine, by design, she's so sublime. Turning water into wine, she overhauled the archetype. Haters try to deny the hype, but triumph shrugs it off like she's kryptonite. And you're Superman with your stupid plan. She'll make you resign like you're Vince McMahon. She'll make you tap with a sharpshooter. Best there was, best there is. And while you're a loser, rock bottom you straight through the basement. She'll stone cold stun you to your grave. Since she's MTG's new Undertaker, tombstone you, that's a neck breaker. Triumph's the truth is an understatement. She saw the flare, it's second nature. She's Triple H, she's taking over. She's Dean Malenko with the four leaf clover. She's bold, weird, intimidator. And you're a coward who can't block her either. She's future. Unprecedented, you can call her Garrett, cause she's relentless. She'll break your teeth, send you to the dentist. You're a partisan, she's an independent. A triumph is a funeral, a procession so beautiful. A lingo's a little unusual, but I'll still outplay you inscrutable. Magic, the gathering, and I'm magic. St. Catherine, the red zones, a labyrinth for your creatures. Inadequate. Miracle St. Catherine, like a javelin to the abdomen. In the top sedan, she's a deadly sin. She'll string you out like a violin. She's sticky like a goblin on the battlefield. She's residing in, no denying it or defying it. Time to resign the game and sign the slip. She'll beat you down with a cape and shield. She'll steal your life and then make you feel so sad and lonely and so defeated. You'll beg for mercy, wish you'd conceded, but you had your chance. That's in the past. This game was over when it came to pass. Your fate was sealed right from the start when I miracled this work of art.
There's a new queen in this game. She go by the name. What it do?
Hello and welcome to Eternal Dirtles. I'm your host, Zach Clark, and with me as always, Tom Bombadil. No, Phil Blackman. Phil,
yo, what up? It's Phil the Bombadil over here. Question for you, Zach.
Yes.
Is it likelier that the most aggressive degenerate is going to open the actual one-for-one ring? Or one of
you
one
mean,
ring?
You mean like me? Or like Alex Bertoncini will open the one ring or something?
Do you think the one ring is more likely to be opened by a terrible degenerate? Or do you think the moral compass of the world upon which we live will bestow upon this $1 million bill
it's hard to say because
of us.
It would. OK, so it could be on flavor. Right. And the one ring slips and finds its way into the hands of a deserving, morally correct hobbit. Or, it could just be the dark one finds his ring. And, we're cast into an age of darkness. So I don't know, Phil. It would be on flavor if it went to like a child. Right. Like it just went to somebody who just like had no idea what they had, or like the cool uncle of a child. And then it was just passed down. I don't know. If I open it, I'm buying a house.
The answer is it's going to go to the richest amongst us.
Yes. Eventually.
Eventually it will find its hand. Yeah. Eventually it will find its hand to the richest person. The cool thing about this is that what the ring does. I mean, this is going to be a flavor episode. You're going to tell us all the,
tis a
all
gift.
The flavor and whether or not the top down flavor of the cards that have been spoiled so far. We're recording the same day as the initial spoilers.
Yep.
If the flavor hits. But I think as somebody who I know the lore, I've seen the movies, but I don't know it as in depth as you. Like you're a master at the stuff. I am definitely the casual for Lord of the Rings. But what the One of One Ring actually does flavor wise compared to what the One Ring does in the story, I feel like is pretty spot on.
It's pretty close. Yeah. I like it a lot.
Let's all draw out the worst of us as much as possible and print this $1 million bill. I mean, that's the thing, right? If somebody opens this, they are in the unique place of knowing that only one is in existence.
Yes.
And therefore get to dictate the price.
You get to say how much it costs, right?
It's so rare that you get to be in a position where
there are more Alpha Black Lotuses than there will be this one ring.
This and the 1996 World Championship card are the only two cards that will have a single copy of itself.
Yeah.
But this one will be worth way more because the 1996 World Championship card doesn't have, not only is it unplayable, but it doesn't have the iconic lore of the greatest
story ever told, right? Like, come on.
The most well-known story in all of nerddom, aside from like Star Wars. And also, if this thing will never see a table, this thing will never be put down on a table.
Man, no.
It will be it will be graded and put into a metallic case that will never see air ever again.
Yeah, I think you're correct. For background, just so everyone knows where I'm coming from, lore-wise, I am a card-carrying member of the Tolkien Society. I have my I have my Amon Hen magazines behind me, which are like, it's basically like what Fill in the Wind does, but for Lord of the Rings. I'm on it. Like, this is my thing. You heard Blake today on the episode, like the drop episode for the first
also look. We have an interview that Zach did with Blake that Zach is going to link right here. Bang. So check that out.
Over there.
It was a good quick interview.
So the thing about that is Blake does a really good job of talking about like the base level of nerddom for this when he starts off the episode or the cast or whatever, the first look. And he says, I'm enough of a Lord of the Rings fan that I like, could tell people that I've read the Silmarillion, but I don't remember all the parts. I'm the guy that remembers most of the parts. I don't know all of them. Hashtag Feanor did nothing wrong. That's all I'm saying.
And that means nothing to me.
Yeah. Phil's in the dark. You know, Phil, just so that you know, the Silmarils are these jewels that this guy Feanor made. And then Morgoth, who's the OG Dark Lord, stole. And no one needs this information, right? Like, I have way too much knowledge on the subject, so this is the one time I can get to kind of Lord of the Rings it over everybody. Anyhow, the One Ring. Let's talk about the One Ring, because I am super excited about this card. The One Ring is a 4-mana legendary artifact with indestructible, and it says
when it enters the battlefield, if you cast it, you gain protection from everything until your next turn. And then it has, at the beginning of your upkeep, you lose a life for each bird encounter on the One Ring. And then it has tap at a bird, put a bird encounter on the One Ring, and then draw cards equal to the number of bird encounters.
On first read, I didn't put together that you weren't taking damage when you tap it. You're taking damage on your upkeep. So if you can find ways to untap this, that's an ancestral recall, right? Like, you play it for four mana, sure. You play it for 4 mana, you time walk, right? Like, your opponent's not doing anything to you for the next turn, and that's going to be very hard for them to kill the One Ring as well, because it's indestructible.
Of note, it doesn't give your stuff protection, it only gives you protection.
Correct.
Which is an effective time walk in that it means you can't die unless they play a card like Thassa's Oracle that says they win the game. So otherwise, you are untouchable for the turn. Although your stuff on board can still be interacted with.
Yes. And that does enter a weird realm of fair play that I'll talk about when I talk about how to use this card. So if you can untap this with Voltaic Key, that's 2 cards. Then it's like 5 cards, because like the next turn, you're going to tap it and draw like a third, like 1, 2, 3. Like, you draw 1, untap it, draw 2, untap it for your next turn, draw 3. Untap it, draw 4. You're up 10 cards.
Yeah, so the One Ring is powerful. In a vacuum by itself, it's really powerful because it scales with the bird encounters. So yes, like the capacity to do untap shenanigans and draw just an insane amount of cards is absurd. But also with any type of proliferation effect, I get that secondary will also be very strong with this card. I've seen some mixed reviews at first glance where some people are like, oh, it's too expensive. or it doesn't impact the board, it's not necessarily powerful
enough. It impacts the board.
It impacts the board in that you're protected and it draws a bunch of cards. But like at four mana, it doesn't do anything to the table. Like it protects you, but it doesn't disrupt your opponent. It doesn't do anything. But the raw rate on how many cards this thing will draw, particularly in Legacy where soul lands and fast mana is available, this thing replaces itself immediately on top of giving you protection. So you know that your life total is going to be the same when you untap because you can't lose life because you have protection from everything.
So but you can lose life. That's an important distinction. Damage dealt to you is reduced to zero. But if somebody
draining will still drain you.
They'll get you. Yeah.
No, they can't target you. That's what I mean.
Yes, they cannot target you. This is true. Yeah, but if they find some way to make you lose life, which is why the One Ring and the life loss thing is important, because that does balance it out. Not that you'd have protection when the damage would be happening.
Right. A powerful part of this card for a couple of particular reasons in Legacy. The first by itself is that you can go cast this, gain protection, tap it, draw a card, untap in your upkeep, lose one life, tap it, draw two cards. So you've effectively four mana Ancestraled, and then you can just cast another one, Legend Rule it, and then gain protection again, and then do it again. So four mana Ancestrals that give you protection from everything by itself as a baseline for multiples is really good, because it means that drawing multiples isn't bad. The second thing that's very good about this card is Indestructible is actually pretty good on it's not good on a creature. It is good on an artifact. The most played removal spells for artifacts or enchantments in the format are destroy effects. So Meltdown is a destroy effect. Wear Tear is a destroy effect. Outland Liberator or whatever is a destroy effect. The only thing that exiles that's routinely played is Prismatic Ending.
Yeah.
And at that point, you're trading at mana parity and you've already gone up a card. So you've gotten the protection effect and you've tapped it to draw a card in response if they try and do that. So you are just well ahead in that play pattern. The only other thing is like maybe the Singleton Leyline Binding here and there, but even then you're still going up the card in positions where you're probably playing soul lands with this card. And the third thing that's really powerful, which I know that you'll get into, is that it says when you cast it, not when you cast it from hand.
Yeah, no, and not that is from really hand valuable. That is gigantic.
That means that you can loop this shit with Emery.
Yeah, well, that's what really I was going to say, is where would we be seeing this in Legacy, right? Maybe in a mono red stompy list, now that initiative's gone, that could be a thing. But specifically, holy God, this card and Emery in 8-cast is just bonkers. Like, being able to just be like, oh, I'll tap Emery and put a One Ring into play, and then I'll draw some cards, and then I'll untap, and maybe I'll draw, you know, like, I'll take the damage, draw two cards, and then use Emery to cast the other one that's in your graveyard. Boop, legendary rule, that one goes to the graveyard. And you still have protection. So like nobody can, basically you put a giant energy field down that your opponent cannot get through while you take one damage a turn and go up three cards a turn. That's insane. It's not like 8-cast is a deck that like you're just gonna hide behind it and then like eventually die to your one damage a turn off of your One Ring. You're going to be like, okay, cool. Now they have a full grip again. I guess I'll just toss down Kappa Cannoneer and slam this thing down. Untap. I've got protection again. Untap and kill you. You know, like it's bonkers.
The powerful thing about this card is that it is an engine by itself because it scales with the counters. Where would this kind of thing slot in? It can be incidental, an 8-cast deck because of how the volume of cards upon which it can draw when it ETBs, like before you get to untap and it's indestructible. Like it has so many layers of protection for itself. The recursiveness that's like actively played in the format, indestructible already, is really powerful.
It's not blue.
The part that that jumps out to me about this card is this is an A-level thing in deck building. You're gonna look at this as like, okay, if this is the powerful thing to do, and that like what you were talking about, it's like, okay, if we want this, then we want to put it in with like Voltaic Keys and Manifold Keys or whatever. And then looking at other things in your C plan, like, you know, Mystic Forge or whatever, that also wants the keys, can be really, this will create new archetypes by itself because the draw is so powerful. It will be a new combo deck.
I want to also reiterate that, like, in that scenario with Emery, you don't need to have two of them. You could have Psy in play and use Psy to sacrifice it to draw a card and then cast it and get the Thopter and that, and like keep drawing a card off of it with Psy, so you don't have to have like a second copy to make this great. And you don't really need a second copy to make it great anyhow. I feel like if you get to draw like four cards off this, you should probably be winning the game in a deck that is so much of an avalanche as 8-cast is, where you're just like boop, 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 and all of a sudden like three or four extra cards just like get you to a point where like almost your entire deck is free.
It's also not speaking to, like, we're just talking about ways that you would do these things to offset the fact that you do have to take damage in your upkeep. This is not counting for the fact that, like, you could just play life gain. You know, like, Sylvan Library sees a ton of play and people just offset the card disadvantage with life gain. And then there's also some decks that just don't care about life total. You can, like, against the decks that are trying to kill you in one shot, or the control decks where life total is a little bit less relevant, you can just be like, all right, I'm going to cast this. I'm going to draw one, take a damage in my upkeep, draw two. And then now you have two burden counters, so you'll take two. That means that you've traded three life for three cards. That rate is unbelievable.
Yeah, that's necropotence. We have unbanned necropotence, guys.
Once you've drawn three cards, you take three damage off of the burden counters, but you've drawn three cards. That means that you've paid four life and four mana for six cards.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's an insane rate.
And it only gets more insane as turns go on. Like, once you're tapping this thing and drawing more than three cards, it's wild times.
I really do think that the main home that it's going to see play in is it will just establish a new combo deck.
Like, yeah, I think
this could just make a colorless combo deck. The rate of card draw on this thing is bonkers by comparison to most other things we have access to. Granted, it's over several turn cycles, but it's still insane.
So let's talk about the flavor real fast. I give this an A+ on flavor, right? The One Ring is indestructible, obviously, right? Gives you the illusion of power with this, like, one turn protection from everything situation. You even get to draw a card for free, and then things start to go badly for you, right? Like, every time you use it, the more you use it, I have a One Ring right here. It's my wedding ring. The more you use it, the more sapped you become. Flavor off the charts for this. I love the flavor for this. I would have never thought to design this particular card. So well done. I would have made this like an equipment that you put on a creature and made it like unblockable or something stupid. Yeah. So that's the One Ring. I think we've given you enough to work with here. We'll eventually be posting decks with the One Ring and stuff like that. But for now, the One Ring, A+. So let's move on to some other revelations. One of the revelations, if you didn't watch the, and I have a reaction video up here too for me watching the first look event and live reacting to it. But one of the revelations we found out is there will be no planeswalkers in this set.
Yes. One of the things that I was dropping in both our Discord and the 90s MTG Discord and every chat that I've been in so far is the biggest takeaway from the announcement beyond the spoilers to me is when Blake expressly said that this set was not designed with Modern Horizons power level.
Yeah.
So
just the pricing for Modern Horizons.
That statement alone of effectively saying we didn't arbitrarily power creep the shit out of everything to rotate every format. Blessings.
Sure. I mean, whatever. You play with the cards you got, you know, like
play with the cards you got, but it's now I'm going to enjoy the spoiler season, not going, oh, geez, what are we going to get that's going to break the format? And instead, I'm going to be going, what fun new cards are we going to get in this set?
I mean, you know? Come on. You know that there's a level of them just even saying that to say it.
Look, even if they do, even if they do print something absolutely fucking busto, the way that I am going to go into the spoiler season for this set is excited as opposed to skeptical, and that changes.
At least they realized that had been a problem, and they have addressed it verbally.
I'm not going to be worrying about what's going to up in the format. Instead, I'm going to be going, what new exciting things can we look forward to today? And that's just such a great feeling for a spoiler season.
So some other like news things before we get into some other cards. So we're going to see some reprints in the form of box toppers. Wasteland was already announced as the,
are you going to replace your Wastelands?
Yeah, you can. If these are cheap enough, I might. I would.
Tell me, is the Valley of Gorgoroth, which is the Wasteland skin, is that flavorful for Wasteland?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. Yeah, I mean, that is a Wasteland. That is like, that is the Badlands, basically. Like, if it was Badlands, it would be even more perfect, but like, that is the exact idea. Like, if you listen, I can look at this and I can hear Bruce Springsteen playing. Like, that's how much of a Badlands it is. But a Wasteland is flavor-wise is pretty spot on. And like when Mount Doom blows, doesn't it, like, aren't you sacrificing the Wasteland to destroy like everything else around it? But yeah, so the reprinting Wasteland as a box topper, Bridge of Khazad Dûm, Ensnaring Bridge, the party tree, that's the tree that at the 111th birthday party for for Bilbo. Party Tree is the Great Henge. That's where my all-time favorite scene from Lord of the Rings is from the movies, is when they take that one scene from the Ralph Bakshi films where, like, there's that guy, like, just putting his feet up, and he's like, and proud foot. So the guy goes, proud feet. My favorite part. We get some interesting reprints of Sol Ring that are serialized, the Elven rings and the Dwarven rings and the rings for men. There will be 3,000, 7,000, and 9,000 in different numbers, which is, you know, whatever.
The serialized cards are 300, 700, 900. So also fewer than Alpha Lotuses.
True. Yes. But so there's another, like, weird foiling that they're doing with that, which will bring it up to 3,000, 7,000, and 9,000. I'll pop the thing over here so that you can give it a look, but I didn't understand any of it. I thought he was mischaracterizing what was going on, but after looking at it, there will be 3,000, 7,000, and 9,000. Maybe that's because it's the number of, you know, the different number of rings or something.
They said that the numbers were chosen because there's 3 rings to elves, 7 rings to dwarves, and 9 rings to men.
Yeah. Only and 3 so of those just, rings they, are named, which is like...
Yeah. They said that in his announcement, he was like, it's from the styling on those promos is the elfin text of the poem that refers to the rings. And so he said... As he was talking about, he was like, 3, 7, and 9. And then they just extrapolated those numbers out. But the reason that it's 300, 700, 900 or whatever is because of 3, 7, 9.
Just as a heads up, that the text on those is Quenya, which is the Elven text. But the language is the Black Speech of Mordor, because Sauron didn't have the time to, like, make up a whole new, like, letter system. So he just used the elves letter system. So that's, you know, that's where that's coming from. So there's that. Then we have some of the commander cards. Get Radagast, Wizard of the Wilds, which is like a bird and beast commander, which I think...
Not legacy relevant.
Yeah, we just recently had something like that. And then you get Sam, Loyal Attendant, which is he pairs with Frodo. That's cool, I guess.
A 3-mana 2/4 that at the beginning of combat on your turn makes a food token. So making a food token every turn on a 3-mana 2/4, and then it says activated abilities of foods you control cost 1 less to activate. So this effectively turns your 2-mana for 3 life into 1-mana for 3 life.
Yeah, that's not terrible.
That by itself isn't good. However, it's a legendary creature, so it in Caracas's colors, and... At the beginning of making a food token every turn, that's 1-mana 3 life. That can blank combat pretty quickly.
Maverick? Thinking about Maverick.
Well, the other thing about this, though, that makes it that is still interesting is because it has partner with Frodo Adventurous Hobbit, which hasn't been spoiled yet.
It draws a card.
If Frodo Adventurous Hobbit is good, it tutors.
Yeah.
And the other one will tutor the other way. So, like, the fact that both of them draw a card plus give you, like, tutors a card and gives you a gain piece in the same turn that it comes in. And then that gain piece is relevant to stopping combat-oriented decks. This one, and it doesn't die to Bolt. It's a 2/4. This one is very much in the range of me to potentially being playable because it does enough incidental things in a color that can abuse it a little bit better than anything else. So, yeah. Like, it seems at first glance like it's trash or that it's not playable, and I actually think that it is pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
Without even knowing what the other card is. Like, if the other card is good, that's really what matters. Like, if the other card is playable, then we're talking.
So, I'll just go over a couple of the other cards that aren't really worth mentioning on a big scale. Reprieve is a white remand. Cool for
it's
modern
a better
players
remand.
That want a white remand. It is a
it's better
remand. I guess because it gets around like can't be countered spells, right?
It means you can returning a spell means that it can still stop a Cavern of Souls creature. Remand itself cannot. Remand says
there you go.
Counter target spell. If it's countered this way, return it to hand. Draw a card.
If that even matters in modern, you know, like
no. I mean, well, Cavern of Souls definitely does. Like Cavern against Primeval Titan, like is very relevant.
Sure.
The difference here is that like Reprieve being able like that is the one specific clause on that Reprieve the interaction that Reprieve does that Remand doesn't. Where this one is just, in my mind, a strictly better remand. It may not be actually better because it's in white rather than blue, and that may be the difference maker. But in terms of like looking at the cards without looking at the colors, like this is a strictly better remand. Okay, hold on. I got to like come back and say all the people who are like, but Phil, what if you're playing remand with Baral? Like you counter the spell with your remand so you can get your loots. All right. Okay, you fucking got me, guy who's thinking about
one dude.
Brawl. Okay,
yeah,
so on to the next one. What do we think about Aragorn and Arwen the Wed?
I mean, I think it's fine. It looks like 3/6 for 6 mana. We're not going to see that in this.
It's in green, in bro. Format. It's in green.
What? Because it pop, it puts a +1/+1 counter on all your guys and gains you some life? It I don't know, man. I wouldn't show and tell this in.
Whenever it enters the battlefield or attacks, you put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control, and then you gain one life for each creature you control, which means that every time you attack, you'll gain a life for your whole board.
Yeah. I don't know, yeah, man. Okay, maybe. Cool. Maybe.
No, definitely not. Yeah. No way.
I think Sora and the Lidless Eye has a better chance of being playable as like a foil to Emrakul.
You know, I saw this card. It's 3BR for a 4/4 that says when it enters the battlefield, you gain control of target creature and opponent controls until end of turn, untap it and gains haste. So it's a threaten.
Yeah.
And then it has 1BR, creatures you control get +2/+0 until end of each turn or until end of turn. And each opponent loses 2 life. So it's a mana sink that can drain your opponent out.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either. Tom Bombadil is, as far as flavor is concerned, I have some things to talk about there, but let me just explain what Tom Bombadil is as a Magic card. It's a 4/4 for all 5 colors, legendary creature, God Bard. As long as there are 4 or more lore counters among sagas you control, Tom Bombadil has hexproof and indestructible. Whenever the final chapter ability of a saga resolves, reveal from the top of your library until you reveal a saga card. Put that card onto the battlefield and the rest on the bottom of your library, then shuffle. This ability triggers only once each turn. The cool thing about this, we're not playing this in Legacy, just as a heads up. Like I think I should just throw that out there. We're not playing this in Legacy. Very cool commander. I love a 5-color commander. I think, so Tom Bombadil is this guy in Lord of the Rings that, like, before Frodo and Sam and Merry and Pippin get to Rivendell, Tom Bombadil, like, helps them get away from a tree, and then he puts on the One Ring, and he doesn't care. It doesn't do anything to him. He gives it back. He's one of only 2 characters in Lord of the Rings that willingly gets rid of the One Ring.
Who's the other?
Samwise Gamgee.
Very powerful.
Yeah. So that, and that says something about that as a character. But the cool thing about this, the flavor thing about this, he's a God Bard. So that's not canon, actually. Tom Bombadil has a lot of lore videos online. You could look up a lot of fan theories online about him. And one of the big fan theories is that he is Eru Iluvatar. He is the god of Tolkien's universe, of the Legendarium, right? And that's not like canon. That's just like a fan theory. It's cool that they threw it into here. But the other fun thing that, like, is the other fan theory is this is actually just Tolkien. Is this the Mary Sued version of Tolkien that he threw into the story as like himself? And he was like, I'm in the story. Boop, boop, boop. And then, like, he's out, you know,
if only this card had the flavor ability called boop, boop, boop. That'd be so much better.
The other cool thing is if we, you know, we take that into account that this is Tolkien, the fact that he cares about sagas, that's kind of meta. I like that.
It's another Vorthos. Like, yeah. they printed Vorthos as the character in, I forget what set they put that into, Unfinity?
Yeah, right? we'll go with it. I think it was not Unglued, whatever came after Unglued. Unhinged?
Yeah, whatever the card that is, just like the Vorthos, it's kind of, it reminded me of that when it came up, where I was like, oh, it just cares about stories and stuff. I mean, the effect is pretty sweet. I mean, the mana cheat, if you have like big sagas, is going to be pretty insane.
Yeah, I feel like this is one of those things where you just like, you want just a couple very powerful sagas in your deck. And as that happens, you just get another new great saga. There's one that just shuffles all the cards back into your deck. So like, you can get to a point where like, you're just cycling all your sagas constantly.
All right, I'm going to Enlightened Tutor my Kiora Best of Sea God to the top of my deck and then just put it into play.
Yeah. Okay. So then after that, we've got Mount Doom, which is basically a callback to Shivan Gorge.
It's a callback to Shivan Gorge.
Legendary land from Urza's Saga.
And Sulphur Springs. Yeah.
You could pay 7 mana to.
To read it, it's a legendary land that says pay 1 life, add red or black. 1BR tap, it deals a damage to each opponent. And then 5BR, sacrifice it in a legendary artifact. Choose up to 2 creatures, then destroy the rest. Even without being as deep into flavor as you are, I get the flavor from the story of what this one's doing, right? Tell me if I'm wrong here. Pay 1 life, add red or black. Okay, it's a volcanic mountain with hot magma in it. Cool. It makes black or red mana. We get it. Deal 1 damage to each opponent. It's because it's a fucking wasteland and everything hurts and nothing goes right for anybody and it sucks. So dealing damage.
It's a Shivan Gorge, yeah.
And then 5BR, Mount Doom, sacrifice a legendary artifact. It's representative of the ring falling into it and annihilating everybody. but Sam and Frodo survive and therefore choose two creatures.
That is correct. Yeah, you got
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Fuck yeah.
apparently, when you did this, the only two creatures you had into play were Sam and Frodo. You didn't have anything better that you could choose.
No. You had. I mean, well, they get each other. You know, they yeah. partnered.
So then we've got Frodo, Sorin's Bane, and Samwise, the Stouthearted. Let's talk about Frodo, Sorin's Bane.
For my own sake, I've heard it pronounced two different ways. I've heard it pronounced Sorin, like mm-hmm. the vampire. And then I've also heard it pronounced the Sauron.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know if one is just like trying to put on an accent or which one's actually correct.
So look, I'm a person of the world, let's say. I grew up in Ohio. I lived in South Jersey. I lived in North Carolina. I lived in New York. So I think it was Jeremy Remix who once said to me, are you from here originally? Because you just talk like, I can't place your accent. And so I say things and you're going to hear me not only mispronounce it, but re-mispronounce it in a different way. I think it should be pronounced Sauron.
Okay.
It's just like Saruman. Saruman is the other one, but you could say Saruman.
Okay.
But yeah.
Okay. So it's not like there's a universe, like the collectively everybody is like, this is the correct way, even though people pronounce it differently. I'm sure there is a linguistically correct way, but like
Tolkien has said it out loud. So we've heard it.
What has he said?
I'm pretty sure he says Sauron.
Okay. I just wanted to know, because like I've always pronounced it Sauron, but I've heard a lot of people say Sauron. The same, like pronounced similar to the vampire. And I was like, I wonder which one's actually
different,
right.
Different guy. I just shortcut things. And I have like, that's where my South Jersey accent comes out a little bit.
Teferi, Teferi. I get it.
Teferi. Yeah. I don't get enough comments about that. By the way, if you're enjoying this, like, subscribe, comment. What are your favorite cards so far? Have you read all of the Legendarium like I have?
For the most part, the only time that the mispronunciation of a name in Magic has annoyed the shit out of me. There are two. So I shouldn't say the only time. There are two. Like if you say Sauron instead of Sauron, like who cares? But if you say Garruk instead of Garruk, or if you say Hagak instead of Hogak, I tense up.
This is because of 20 Sided Store. I would occasionally say Yase instead of Jace.
Well, that's just being play. That's voluntarily playful. Yeah, that's not like. You know,
I said Garruk a few times. I don't even care because he's like not a character anymore.
He's not a character anymore. I mean, he'll come back eventually, but like
he always does.
It is confirmed Garruk and it's confirmed Hogak, not Garruk or Hagak. All right, moving on.
Frodo, Sauron's Bane, is a legendary halfling citizen. You can pay Orzhov Orzhov to make him a scout that becomes a 2/3 with lifelink. He starts off as a 1/2. Then you can play. Black. If he's a scout, he becomes a rogue, and then he gets whenever he deals combat damage to a player, that player loses the game if you have tempted the ring four or more times. Otherwise, you tempt the ring, or the ring tempts you.
Which they haven't explained yet. I kept trying to ask, and he wouldn't answer. He did say that they weren't spoiling that mechanic today.
Yeah.
Beyond like what this is my guess is card.
It's like being in a dungeon,
which is terrible. But this is the only card so far that refers to getting to do something if you've been tempted. There are a bunch of other cards that we'll talk about that tempt you, but there aren't any payoffs with it. So
yeah,
I mean,
so we should talk about Samwise then.
Yeah, this unfortunately it seems like this is just going to be another parasitic mechanic where you get to do something if the ring tempts you and. This is the only set where the ring will be able to tempt you. I have a question about Frodo beyond it being what's the Boros card that originally did this?
Figure of Destiny.
Figure of Destiny. Beyond being a figure of destiny in the lore of Lord of the Rings, are they halflings or are they hobbits?
Halflings,
or
are they interchangeable? Halflings are actually now Wizards of the Coast, but TSRs, we're not going to get sued by the Tolkien estate word for hobbits.
Oh, so the Tolkien estate owns Hobbit and then
Hobbit.
And
therefore... Yeah. Hobbit came first actually because what happened was when D&D started becoming a thing and they started adding races and stuff, they literally were going to call halflings hobbits. And the Tolkien estate was like, we will sue the pants off of you. And they were like, halflings then.
I see. Okay. So that's even though they have the IP here, they don't have the rights to the word hobbit.
I think that it just, like, mechanically speaking, they're the same. They are the same thing, and there are cards that, you know, work with halfling.
Right. But I'm saying that, like,
if you want to make a halfling like Lord Deck or something like that, you can you can include these guys, because that would suck if you couldn't.
If they didn't have to worry about getting sued or had the rights to hobbit, they would have used hobbit here, not halfling.
I think they easily could use hobbit.
Okay.
It just, I truly believe that this late in the game, after they've already, like, you know, I think we were, I was talking to somebody the other day about Lost Soul. If you read Lost Soul, it's summon Lost Soul, which is not a thing anymore. It's now like Spirit Minion or something like that. But, like, I think that they're trying to get to a point where they only have, like, X amount of different kinds of creatures, especially if they're so close to each other, and just make them halflings, because halflings already exist in Magic the Gathering, and we don't want to keep... Are Kithkin just Kithkin, or are they halflings? I don't remember. I think it just gets to a point where they're like, you know what? Like, we don't need to add another creature type to the game that, like, no one's going to use, especially outside of this, when we could have this work. And I'm sure they're thinking about for Commander... We're like, some people just like, so there's a guy out there that's like, I'm gonna make a halfling like centric commander deck,
totally.
You know?
Yeah.
People do that. Shout out to Ryan Fisher, who was playing an all Thrawn deck against us at Command Fest in like May. Ridiculous. So let's go to Samwise the Stouthearted. He is a 2-mana flesh 2/1. When he enters the battlefield, choose up to 1 target creature permanent you control that was put there from the battlefield this turn. Sorry, 1 permanent you control in a graveyard that was put there this turn, and you can return to your hand, and then he tempts the ring.
The artwork on this one being called the Stouthearted, you could easily alter him holding a Guinness in his left hand.
That would be good. And this actually looks, I said this in the review, this actually kind of has like the facial features of Sean Astin, which is pretty cool.
It does. It really does.
Yeah. We'll put up some of the other versions of these cards, because you get some really cool looks at like what the art is going to look like. The one Frodo one that is the showcase Frodo one is a straight callback to the Ralph Bakshi films, which is really cool to me. He's got the like the haircut, so that's rad. Then we have the Shire that creates a food token.
Yeah, is the Shire underwhelming to you?
I mean,
or is it flavorfully on?
Shouldn't it be?
So you think it's good? The
Shire is fine.
Yeah. It's a legendary land that enters the battlefield tapped unless you control a legendary creature. It has add green, and then it has 1 green tap. Tap an untapped creature you control, create a food token.
The only thing I could think of that it could do otherwise is like if you have the One Ring, it puts Gandalf in your hand or something like that.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
You know, but aside from that, like, I think
it's sort of being bland is good.
Yeah, like the Shire. The only thing that happens in the Shire is at the very end of Lord of the Rings, after the movie is done, there are
27 endings. Yeah.
There's another chapter, basically, where the hobbits go back to the Shire. Saruman has taken over the Shire with Wormtongue, and they have to like take back the Shire. It's called the Scouring of the Shire. I don't know if you want to go and read Return of the King. It's like the last like 40 pages of Return of the King. They took it out of the movies because it was like, this is boring.
Yeah.
It's like, we just had the big ending. What are we doing?
And by big ending, you mean like the big ending followed by 40 other endings. I remember when I saw it in theaters. Obviously, the movie's insanely long, right? And I remember once it got to like the 4th of the 12 endings or whatever, I kid you not, there was somebody that just out loud went, oh my God, come on, man.
That's
and everybody started laughing. It was awesome. Because nobody left, mind you. Everybody was like, we're here. We're watching.
I saw Return of the King. I saw all of them in the theater, but I saw Return of the King with a friend of mine. We got, and we were just like so into Lord of the Rings. And when we got to the end, Sam and Frodo are going to the Undying Lands. I started like getting teared up, man. And I was like, I knew this was going to happen. Just like starting to get sad because I knew it was over. I'm like, we're not getting any more like good Lord of the Rings. This is it. This is all the story. Like, Tolkien's dead. We're not going to get a fourth age. I was bummed. We've got that. We've got the basic lands, which look cool. I just want to say the island. That's not an island, guys.
There's a couple more cards that we skipped over. You cannot pass. Why did Sir Ian McClellan change it to you shall not pass in the movie?
I don't know, man.
Do you think that was a mistake, but it was their best take, so they kept it? Or
yeah, I think that's really what happened. Yeah.
Did the world of Tolkien fandom flip their shit when he said it wrong in the movie?
Nope. No one knew.
Everybody was just like,
enough,
this is
great. There weren't enough like the movies created an entire base. Like I got into Tolkien heavily after the movies. But like the movies are what brought me in initially. Like I knew about the Ralph Bakshi films, the Rankin and Bass Hobbit, and the Rankin and Bass Lord of, Return of the King movie. Because the Ralph Bakshi film is basically Fellowship and Two Towers. And then like they gave it back to Rankin and Bass for Return of the King. I knew about all that stuff and I watched it. I even had like a ritual where every year on New Year's Day, I worked at this comic shop. Everybody else would go out drinking and stuff. And I was like straight edge at the time. So I worked on New Year's Day and I would watch the Ralph Bakshi. It's like a 3.5 hour film. The Ralph Bakshi Lord of the Rings film. And just like take in the rotoscope, you know? So I would do that every year. But I didn't really get into Lord of the Rings until after the movies came out. And so what I love about this is that I think that you're going to find that we get almost as many Lord of the Rings fans out of this after being exposed to it as a magic set as Lord of the Rings fans coming in become magic fans.
Yeah, for sure. This will be one of the crossovers that's actually super effective.
Like my buddy Harry from Moxfield today was like, should I read these? And I was like, just get The Hobbit, start there. And he was like, I'm just going to get all four of the books. There's one. We've got one fan.
Yeah.
I think that there's going to be a non-zero number of people that, you know, are like, okay, I'm up in the hype. Like, I want to know what actually happens. And they like, they read Lord of the Rings. My advice for those people is start with The Hobbit. It's a bit of a children's story, but it's the shorter thing. It's like 11 hours if you're on Audible. No, we'll toss our Audible link down below. We still got that. If you want to get into Lord of the Rings, this is the time to do it. You know,
fuck yeah.
And you get a free book. Start with The Hobbit. Fellowship of the Rings is a great read, but like that first third of the first book is you're in the Shire and it's just dense. They're just explaining the Shire to you. But after you get out of Shire, it's great, man. Like, and even in the Shire is good, but like, they're really doing a lot of world building there. But once you get out of the Shire, it's just action all the way through. Two Towers is all action. And Return of the King does some really excellent world building, and you get like a lot of, you know, it's just the whole thing's great. Like, I kid you not, this to me is the greatest story ever told. The Silmarillion is my Bible. I can't say enough good things about Lord of the Rings as a thing, you know, and the fan base is amazing.
Well, we got one more thing before we stop. We have one more card.
One more card.
And we have Gollum, Patient Plotter.
Oh yeah, Gollum.
Which is one in a black for a 3/1. I don't think this is the only Gollum. We're gonna be getting a bunch of different versions of the same character.
Yes, I wanted to mention that.
So the way that they explained for this one is that the characters are based on moments throughout the story. So you're seeing the characters essentially progress through the story.
Yeah, in a moment in time in the story. Yeah.
In moments in time. And then the colors for each of those cards are associated to what they are in that moment in time. So the characters obviously change as the story goes on. And so we already know we're getting a bunch of Gandalfs, a bunch of Frodos, a bunch of Sams. I imagine we're going to be getting several Gollums as well, because to make Gollum only an uncommon would feel weird as of all the things.
Right, yeah.
So I imagine we'll get another version of him. But this particular version is actually a pretty relevant effect. So it's a 1 in a black for a 3/1. It says when it leaves the battlefield, the ring tempts you. We don't necessarily know how powerful that is yet, because we don't know what other things can pay off that mechanic. But the other effect is black, sacrifice a creature, return Gollum from your graveyard to your hand, activate only as a sorcery. It's a sac outlet in the graveyard.
Yeah.
And that is historically very powerful. Now, it's mana gated because you have to pay a black.
Yeah.
But the fact that you can discard a sac outlet is, I don't know what deck would want this right now, but it is historically an extremely powerful effect to have sac outlets in other zones. If you have a discard outlet that doesn't cost mana, then it effectively is just black sac a creature.
Yeah.
Which can be very powerful. And I would not be surprised if this shows up for exactly that ability, because you want to be able to discard your sac outlet. I don't think that Legacy is in a place where you can do something like that without comboing. And I think the mana gate on this and only might be too steep, but I wouldn't rule it out. I think of all of the cards beyond the One Ring itself as like the most potential to see play in Legacy, I think it is that one because of that ability, which is unique.
Well, other things I wanted to say, we're going to get a Gandalf the White. Apparently we've got Gandalf Friend of the Shire is a card. So those are some things.
I'm waiting for them to give us another version of the One Ring that is just Gandalf's Divining Top. We are looking forward to it.
Well, yeah, I guess the One Ring I feel like doesn't change. I'm kind of bummed that we're not going to get like a whole like cycle of legendary ring cards. that are like, you know, Ninja Verna, and I forget the names of the elven rings off the top of my head.
One thing that Blake said, though, was if you can name a character in the story, it is likely that they have a card in this set. He was like, I'm sure we missed some.
Yeah.
He's like, for most of you out there, if you can name a character, they will show up in the set.
Well, so yeah. So let's talk about real fast the commander decks. So you've got the Hosts of Mordor, which is obviously orcs and Nazgul and stuff. You've got the Elven Council, which is that's Simic. The Mordor one was Grixis. Then you've got an Abzan Food and Fellowship, which is, I'm assuming, hobbits. And then you have the Riders of Rohan, which
Blake
is...
Blake was pronouncing it Rohan, so...
Jeskai deck. And so with that, with the Riders one, like, you're going to get Theoden, you're going to get Elmir, Eowyn, you'll probably get Pippin in that one, or is it Merry? Mm-hmm. But yeah, we haven't seen Merry and Pippin yet, right? We haven't seen Legolas or Gimli, we haven't seen Boromir or Faramir. Denethor the second.
What? Yeah, Blake had also mentioned on the Twitch stream that he was like, this set is going, like, has a legend sub theme. So like one of the cards called You Cannot Pass, which is why I was saying, is it You Cannot Pass or Shall Not Pass? But this one's a white instance that says destroy target creature that was blocked or was blocked by a legendary creature this turn. So there's a legendary sub theme because there are so many characters that they wanted to include. So
yeah,
you know, your Mox Ambers will get more powerful, your Caracas will have more targets, as is the case with every set, but this one a little bit more densely. So are you going to change out your basics for the map basics?
No, man, because I have my basics are good, man. Like I have some great basics. Like I'm using the Synthwave basics for my 8 cast deck. Like that's too on point. I will use them for like EDH decks and stuff. I like to just have like a bunch of weird basics on hand. Like we just got these guys, super cool oil slick basics.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
these are rad, and it's great because in EDH, like, you know, like, you don't have necessarily always a place to put all these things, but like if you have a deck that just needs like two of each basic or something, like my Tom Bombadil deck is probably going to have a bunch of cool basics in it. I told Watsy that I'm going to make a commander deck for every legend they put out, so you can go to my mock field once this deck is out. I will literally be making a deck for every single legend. Yeah.
Let us know in the comments. This is the first news that I'm hearing that you're going to embark upon this venture. If you are in the group of listeners to our podcast that would be interested in Zach's Lord of the Rings themed EDH decks for each legend, let us know if you want.
Please comment below.
See him.
Yeah.
Let us know if you want to see Zach produce his EDH deck list videos that tell you the flavor of why he chose all the cards he did for each one.
Yeah. Well, I think that does it for now. This was a bit of a bonus episode. Like I said, you can check out that interview I did with Blake Rasmussen. You can check out the reaction I had to the first look. You know, we interviewed Phil Nguyen last week. That's it for us today. Have a good one, everybody.
Fossa Phil. What it do? Let's go. Companions breaking legacy up in a choreo. Inya, Sabo, Zerda, Larissa, and Garuda go. Restrictions ain't breeding creativity in this format when the only restriction is that you have to play them, yo. Only CMCs under 2 ain't no threshold. It's how every deck has been built since 2004. Lyrics of the dream den, Inya, Sabo, creeping. Casting all them bubbles even when you hardly need them. Legacy demanding you have a companion, yo. Even if it means presenting that thick 80, yo. Yori and flying and flicking all of 2019 to remind us of Watsy's mistakes be power creeping, yo. Big Garuda bugged and banned from Magic TG, yo. Cloning up itself like he was casting mirrors, yo. Zero is even meaning LED be cleaning up like Black Lotus was unrestricted and we ain't even dreaming, yo. Companions be untouchable unless you cast them, yo. Hellbent is a fallacy like the cult of Rakdos. Wishes are for losers when you can just have it, yo. Why you wasting space when this meal comes with a free roll? If you wanna play competitively, put your companion where my eyes can see. Another mirror match, this is obscene. These designs were made egregiously. If you wanna play competitively, put your companion where my eyes can see. Another mirror match, this is obscene. These designs were made egregiously.
What it do?
Zerda be my best friend in all of the Boros, yo. Activated abilities, all there is to know. Monolithic combos make infinite mana, yo. Khan the great creator, tutor, lattice, lock you, bro. Giganta wells springing up in Eldrazi aggro. That kind of flavor fail might even throw off my flow. Oh wait, I'll cast Lutri and just copy it apropos. Reclaiming my time like I was out on the Senate flow. Garuga the macro sage is a dino hippo, yo. Obosh Pearson pray cause he's a horror helio. Mori the collector, at first glance unplayable. Kahiro got an offense if your deck in beast mode. Companions are super busted and ain't no secret, yo. Future League on a mission from no one knows. I'ma take a tangent like the movie Memento. It's like Watsy's mistakes are tattooed up upon the skull. Livers is the king if we be epic storming, yo. Killing it with Tiger Kyro Baskin's hubby, yo. I'm the only one who hasn't seen an episode because I've been too busy getting fucked up by companions. If pulling out the banhammer is what they gonna do, will Rosewater be designing for 2022? The future is fraught with more avoidable mistakes. Maybe they should change design to power creep the brakes.
If you wanna play competitively, put your companion where my eyes can see. Another mirror match, this is obscene. These designs were made egregiously. If you wanna play competitively, put your companion where my eyes can see. Another mirror match, this is obscene. These designs were made egregiously. If you wanna play competitively, put your companion where my eyes can see. Another mirror match, this is obscene. These designs were made egregiously. If you wanna play competitively, put your companion where my eyes can see. Another mirror match, this is obscene. These designs were made egregiously.
What it do?
Call me Nostradamus, my name for Sophilio. Brewing up some nonsense like a turbo townie, yo. Eternally dirtling in the top 8 of a tournament, drinking some bourbon like companions, I'm despicable!